Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice. Hello, and welcome to Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Today's guest is Gina Beck, a longtime leader in the age tech space and a strategist focused on how technology can support independence, connection, and better experiences as we age. Gina most recently served as director of age tech at AOL. She's also a board member for Leading Age California and Eschaton. She brings a really practical perspective to the tech conversation, especially around how brands can better connect with today's active agers and the next generation of older consumers. Gina, welcome to Roundtable Talk.
Thank you, Derek. I'm glad to be here.
Always enjoy our conversations. So you've decided that, or you've described older adults as the OGs of the internet. What does that phrase mean, and why does it matter for how organizations think about technology today?
Yeah, I think oftentimes there's this misconception or stereotype that older adults are not engaged with technology. And, you know, the pandemic, I think, exacerbated that stereotype when you had these window visits and not like FaceTime with older adults back then. But the reality is the OG of the internet goes back to the fact when AOL first came to the internet. So, you know, 30 plus years. And, you know, the big thing is the 70, 80-year-old folks, they got their first email on AOL or even on Yahoo. And in doing so, these folks who I would say were the pioneers, they were on the internet, first movers inside of that, that they've grown up with the internet. The difference between maybe a millennial or even a Gen X, Gen Zers, is that they also know the difference of what life is without the internet. So these OGs really understand how to kind of leverage the internet to get the most out of the internet, but also know when to turn it off. They shut their phones down or their computers. And so they're really kind of the ones that you can actually model like what's good boundaries as well as what's good engagement with technology. So taking that in mind, senior living operators think that, you know, we have the greatest generation still in the silent generation. And that may be true, but really you've got younger boomers and Gen Xers who are starting to emerge inside of senior living. And so really understanding their access and understanding technology is a little different from what we know.
That's a great point. And you've already kind of, you know, talked about what some of the differences are, but what are some of the biggest misconceptions that organizations have about older consumers and their relationship with technology? That's really interesting how you were just saying that they know when, or at least they are turning it off. But what are some other misconceptions?
I think that people think that older adults don't know how to use tech. And so there's a reluctance to give them any kind of technology or to make things a little bit more efficient by using technology. And when you start interviewing older adults and resident councils, they'll be the first to say, why don't you bring in a robot, or why don't you engage some sort of voice technology if that's going to make it easier on the staff? They care about their staff. And they really, A, because I think there's great personal relationships with their staff, but B, because they know they work so hard and they need a lot of help. So older adults, I think see this as augmentation of what the staff is already doing, technology. And I actually think the people that prevent technology to actually be part of the ecosystem are actually the staff themselves. They're reluctant. And maybe it's because there's some upskilling and all that's involved. You will be surprised that I just recently talked to a very large provider and they still don't have Wi-Fi in all their buildings. So when you have something that going on and they have like 400 plus buildings, you're kind of like, how come that's still a problem? Like, that shouldn't be the excuse anymore. We should be beyond that.
Sure. That's table stakes at this point. You know, people are just expecting that because they expect that, you know, out in the world. But That's interesting. So, you know, there is, as you've referenced, the lingering stereotype that older adults are behind the curve when it comes to technology. But the reality is different, as you say. But what does the data actually tell us about how the audience engages online?
Well, you could use, there's a group called Pew Research, and they did a recent just study of all the technology that was adopting. And there was this lingering statistic where the older adults did not have smartphones. Well, that is totally gone. And I will say that there's a basically, I think they're clear to like 90, 95% have smartphones. That's a real good indicator of the use of technology in an older adult, that they're willing, obviously they use a smartphone because also they access the internet. From AOL, when I used to work there, the interesting thing is they're also really big about leveraging technology to manage their finances. They're really big about managing their technology to find out the latest in the news. There's so much good information about, you know, when they're looking to travel, they want to go online. And if anything, they started to use ChatGPT, and I saw some data around that. They're not far removed from the rest of the world because they're using ChatGPT to create their travel itineraries. So I just think, again, there's a lot of misinformation and there's a lot of folks stuck in the past. And I think older adults see the value of tech, and especially if it's easy to use and easy to adopt, they're on it.
Fascinating. So you've talked about the active ager mindset. How is that different from the way older adults have traditionally been portrayed in marketing and the media?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. And I actually will be 55 this year. So technically I'm in that bracket where people cater toward the 55 plus, which I start laughing a little bit because I'm like, okay, because I don't see myself in any shape or form to be in the 55 plus, you know, residences and so on and so forth. But I think that older adults are always portrayed where they're like in a, like sitting in a sofa or in a chair and lounging and, you know, or they're doing chair yoga, you know, and I think that that's such a wrong perception. I'm in a book club and I'm the youngest in my book club. The oldest person in our book club is 70. We've got 10 ladies in the book club and each one of them are so active. Like when I say active, there's a statistic out there that says that this generation, Gen X and young baby boomers are the generation that's exercising the most. And they're not exercising in chair yoga. They're exercising, like they're hiking. And I'm talking about not like a 1 mile hike, like 5, 10, 15 mile hikes. They're skiing on Mammoth. They're doing things. They're very engaged and very active. So, you know, there's a reason why this generation is so focused on being active, because they've also been supportive of their older adults in their lives. And they've seen that, you know, by being active, they're going to have a longer longevity. I think one of them told me, motion is lotion, Gina. And I started laughing, but that's really what they're focused on. They want to be moving all the time because they know that if they don't move all the time, it does end up being much more like physically painful when you just sit in your chair all day long.
Sure. No, that's, you know, well said. You know, related to that, you've shared, you know, but that brands shouldn't age themselves by trying to look senior, by having those people sitting in the chairs, doing chair yoga, those sorts of things. What are some of the most common ways that organizations unintentionally or intentionally age themselves?
Well, I do think the images that they select, for sure. It's funny though, and you probably do this, you probably speak about this all the time. And I go on periodically, and I live in San Marcos, California, near Carlsbad. So that's a whole echelon of senior living providers, big ones that have communities. And I look at their pictures and it's just their websites are so overwhelming. They're like, they don't really focus on kind of the lifestyle. It's very apparent that they're focusing on trying to get you to move in by, you know, having a little chat, which I'm glad to see the chatbots are showing up on the website. So that's definitely making movements. But I also see that that's like overdone and they're missing the point. Like when I go on a website, I don't want to be overwhelmed by the chatbots and overwhelmed by the old, you know, the pictures of everyone smiling because they're going to show old people smiling. I really wanted to know, what's your lifestyle? Like, what are you focused around? Or is it really just about getting me to move in? So it's like a balance. And I think that ages the whole thing because, you know, it's that's the old school way of how senior living would market. It's just like, okay. And then immediately, I think I saw one that's literally right next, very close to me. And they're actually very well known and they do great service. That's the thing. They're doing such a detriment to the services they provide. And you see these pictures of like, and I know the floor plans are very important, but that shouldn't be the first thing I see. I see like a person of face. And then immediately when I draw down is a floor plan and the chatbot pops up and I'm like, oh, I don't have any idea what this is focused around. So I don't know, you know, I went on a Viking cruise. I think you and I talked about this and it was fantastic. And you know what drew me to the Viking cruise? And believe it or not, I was probably one of the younger ones on that cruise, was the fact that they talked about their education series and how they were going to let out the tours and the beautiful like views and all the things, even the food. It was, and I almost felt like if senior living could, and they always claim there are crews that doesn't move, could do something similarly focused around the adventure and what they're focused around. I think it would shift kind of, I almost get like a distaste sometimes. I'll go on the website like, oh my God, I'm just being attacked by everything. I want to know like, what is it about? And obviously they'll be like, book a tour. Like, I just want to know from the pictures that you're displaying on your website, like really, can I know what this community is about?
Sure. And, you know, it is interesting because lifestyle is so important and your senior living is kind of at the intersection of hospitality, lifestyle and healthcare, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So there is that kind of blend of different kinds of messages, but you mentioned chatbots and, you know, floor plans. And I know that there are different services out there to help, perhaps consumers understand if they can afford a particular floor plan or afford the community. But I guess, what role do you think some of that tech should play on the site? Where do you think that lives in relation to the lifestyle imagery?
Well, if we all claim that we're person-centered care, we should be able to just pop up and put in a couple, like maybe they should be a quick little questions that they can answer immediately, and then let AI really drive kind of this impact of personally creating the right experience on that website versus, you know, again, I know cost is something people think about. That's their number one question. I went to three websites even before coming on. I was like, God, all I can see is it costs. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is interesting, but I don't really want to talk about cost right now. So I just think that if that's a priority for that inquiry, then the website should be able to, like, you know, best answer it. But the chatbot was kept on asking, right? It was on the corner and I had to finally get it to stop bothering me. But the chatbot's like, what's your number one interest? What's your number one goal? You know, and I think that's the whole point, but it's too much. Like, it's like, okay, I think, and I watched the Smash sessions because they were all showing these really cool things, the cool videos and all of the interact, and I think it's great, but I think it's overwhelming because it's like, it's just, there's a better way to present your story. And I think it's not inundating it from the very beginning when you enter that website.
Sure. That's interesting. I know you do a lot of work in consulting with organizations on their websites, their digital platforms. And coming from an age tech perspective, it's interesting that you're not necessarily all about piling on the tech, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But you know, that you've kind of thought through it and are coming at it from the user perspective, and not just, hey, let's use all of the latest tech that we can. Even though we, as you said earlier, that older adults are, you know, have largely caught up, if I can use that phrase, with you know, the rest of the population in tech. But talk
so
a little
AOL
about that.
AOL is like the number one website for older adults 55 plus. It's like the number one site that's visited from the oldest age bracket and the youngest to the 55 plus and on. What's fascinating is we did a rebuild of the website before I transitioned, and we spent a lot of time learning about this consumer of what works. And they're also the loudest. So just like in senior living, when we make a change, we would hear about it left and right. And what they didn't like is anytime you added too much tech in it, even though they know how to deal with tech, but it was overwhelming them. Like they saw AOL as like the neutral, like safe haven from the internet. They want to go to a place where they're not being treated like the rest of the internet, where it's too much. They liked the fact that it was just, they can scroll up and down, they could find what they needed. They didn't need to spend a lot of time looking for things. You laugh. We used to have this menu and it was on the left pane of AOL. The problem was nobody would go there. Like even though it was there, you would think they would automatically click there. They actually liked it that the menu was hidden into a little hamburger on the top, a hamburger menu. And it just, again, they're going to go what they're looking for. So games is something that on our site that they search for. There are people that all they come to AOL is for their games. And so you know that, as I said earlier, the OG of the internet, folks know exactly what they're looking for and they know how to find it. They do not want to be bothered. Yahoo made this big announcement that they had a relationship with McAfee, where their McAfee will now be able to tell you when it's fake news. So you would get that and it'll pop up. And I thought, wow, that's cool. Our users would love that. They didn't. They didn't like AOL telling them what they thought was fake news. They wanted to be able to discern it for themselves.
Interesting.
They want more choice. They want simplicity. They don't ever want anything told. They want to be able to make that intellectual decision. So that I think that changes a lot of perception, because people think if I just shove it down everyone and tell them that this is what they want, and they hate that. They like simplicity. They like elegance. Simpler is better, and not because it's for old people, because we didn't made it humongous. Font sizes, we gave that as an option if they wanted it. It was just the same old kind of thing, except it was just really easy to find. It wasn't cluttered. They hate clutter. And I think that we've kind of missing the boat if we over-clutter our websites.
Sure. And I think that's, you know, use the word elegant. And I think that there's a lot baked into that term. And, you know, from a design perspective, I do think simpler is better. And, you know, I know we talk with clients all the time about what is the right amount of information. And, you know, I think historically websites have been a place where some folks have wanted to tell absolutely everything about an organization, when in fact that can almost become information overload, or can become information overload for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, 100%.
Interesting. So, this is a question that every Roundtable Talk guest gets. What are you looking forward to as you age, Gina Beck?
I would love to be able to really rely on my technology in a way where, as I can't do the things I used to do, my technology will still empower me to still do it. So, for example, I've been dealing with just a very slight arthritis in my hands. And someone who's in tech, it's a really big problem because you're always on the keyboard. So it's a little frightening for me, because I'm kind of like, I don't want pain. I want it to be a good experience. And so I will say in that case, voice comes into play, leveraging voice, not being able to touch something. I also have vision issues. So, you know, when my contacts are awry or my eyes are super sore, it's nice to use hearing like Audible or some other type things where I can hear it versus see it, which never in my life, because I am such a visual person, to go and transfer to a different mode, but I still get what I need. And so that's kind of how I see aging, is that you may not be able to do the same things you used to do, but the content of what you did is still the same. So the process of how you get there could change, and you're just using tech to help you. And so I do see tech as that kind of, again, and you heard me say this 100 times over, it's a means to the end. So if I want to listen, and I'm an English major by trade, so I literally love books. And so if I can't, because my eyes are too tired, read my books with, you know, paper copies, but I can't stop buying them, so I have lots of paper copies. But then I'm so guilty of, oh, I'm so tired, so I'll go and use my Audible on the book, even though I bought the paper copy, just because it just, you know, I can listen and read without like feeling like I have to focus on, you know, with my eyes. So I just think that's where aging needs to go. And our reliance on our tech shouldn't be like a bad word. Like, I think people are like, I don't want to use tech. It should be natural. And I'm all about organic and natural. But, you know, if it's going to keep my independence and I can still have purpose because the tech is allowing me to still do the things in a different way, but still getting to the goal of what I want to do, then that's how we should age. And we shouldn't ever feel like it's a bad thing to use tech.
Sure, sure. So you just referenced that technology should be a means, not the end, which I think that's a really important idea to pause on. What does that look like in practice when designing experiences for older adults?
Yeah. And I know AI is somewhat well-received or controversial. It's kind of, you have this constant back and forth. And I myself also struggle with a little bit because I am worried about, you know, we think of Skynet and the Terminator, and I get all that, right? but at the same time, I also see there's such a lot of value. So for example, and I'm just thinking of a scenario, but if you're like using a fridge that has AI in it, and you're trying to figure out, you know, and I am pre-diabetic, so who knows, by that point I might be diabetic. So you're trying to figure out how you're going to make something to eat, and you could leverage the fridge, and there are smart refrigerators, could go look at your ingredients and say, hey, you know, you've made this recipe before, Gina, go ahead and you have the ingredients to do this. And I'll be like, oh, I didn't even think about that. I see AI as an assistant, like a helper. I don't see it. It's always human in the loop. So if you think about how tech is helping you, it's still your idea. You're still like in control, but you need that, oh, I didn't think about that. Or, oh yeah, you know, I use also tech. I use voice to control my laundry machine. So like, I'll be like, you know, not paying attention, laundry and dryer, and I'll work on something with you per se. And then you'll hear my Alexa say, hey, Gina, and my husband has made it really funny. So it'd be like, your washy wash washer is all done. And so you start laughing, but at the same time, you're like, oh yes, okay, now I need to change and put in the dryer and things like that. So it's like helping me just remember things that, you know, you just get so busy, and you just, and whether I'm older or younger, everyone gets so busy, you need those reminders to do things. And so that's what I mean. It's like a means to the end. You're not changing drastically the things you're doing, but you're being more efficient. Oh, you'll laugh at this one. I was at the grocery store at Ralph's, and I was doing self-checkout. And so the self-checkout was literally like, you know, going through, and then it's annoying when it says, stop, you didn't put it in the baggage area. Have that ever happened to you?
Oh, yes.
And you get so annoyed. And so, but my daughter was there with me. And so what was happening is she was picking up the stuff and putting it in the, into the cart. So she's packing it. So the lady comes over, I go, you know, I think we're just too efficient for this technology that it's freaking out. So and so that's where, in this case, you need the technology to kind of be a little bit smarter so you're not so annoying. But I do think I have a lot of hope. I just think that it's just going to help me do my job better, and, you know, and it's going to help me live a better life. And I've just, again, you always have guardrails about the whole fear of AI, but I do think it's just going to help us all live a better life.
I agree. I think there's a lot of wise words in there. And it is important to remain in control and to not just simply, kind of blindly turn over decision-making to AI. So, as we've been talking about, tech is evolving quickly and not every tool actually improves everyday life. From your perspective, what technologies are most promising right now for supporting independence as people age? So, if you could be a soothsayer, look out into the future, what do you think some of the most promising tech is?
It's funny, it's been around for a while and it's evolving, but I'm all about the smart home. I'm all about thermostats, knowing the right temperature based upon your personal preferences and then managing it. I remember there was an issue in Florida and it was hot and the thermostats were not managing it because it was manual and people were getting dehydrated. And so being able to prevent environmental issues to happen by your technology, I just think is so important. I'm really optimistic about fall prevention. And my big thing about falls is that falls can be preventable, but it's one of the number one, outside your, heart disease and some of the cancers, it's one of the number one reasons why a senior, an older adult, either passes away or ends up going into a senior living community. And even in a senior living community, it's still a problem. And so I feel like that technology is getting better and better, and leveraging AI and better understanding why a person falls, but also alerting. My father's 85 and he is a retired physician. He's been falling a lot. And it bothers me. And, we have Alexa. You could say, hey, Alexa, call blah, blah, blah. You have all those ways that you can prevent, catastrophe from happening after you fall. But the whole idea of preventing a fall and not getting down to the of I need help is going to be a game changer. And so I just think that technology, I see a lot of new nurse call systems coming on the market, a lot of new opportunity to help us better mitigate falls.
So what are some of the other tech, when you talk about, I'm curious, smart home technology, but also technology to prevent falls. Talk a little about some of the most cutting edge kinds of things that will help prevent falls, but also just more broadly, living life as we age in the home.
Yeah, I mean, we have to borderline be careful of the whole big brother thing. That's always have been the big issue, right? No one wants us to be watching things. I actually have a video that I did at ASA. It's called Uninvited Guests, and you should actually watch it. It's a really old video, but it talks about technology that was measuring things like how many walks and what they were eating, and then reported back to the older daughter, and basically the older person gamed the system and basically faked his way through it, and so she got a misconception of what was really going on. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm really talking about empowered, where that older adult has made a decision around, hey, I do want to, mitigate my falls. So I want to, where am I falling? Well, I usually fall when I go from my bedroom to my bathroom. So is there a way that we could create, whether it's a lighting system or something that we can prevent that fall from usually happening? I don't want to name brands.
Not asking you to.
Okay. But so I think that's important. The technology that you have to wear is so controversial. And it's even controversial for the older adult because it becomes what I call the scarlet letter of aging, where you have to wear the PERS device. And even me wearing my, Apple Watch, those things, when you don't wear it, that's when usually they fall even more, right?
Sure.
Or they're taking the bathtub. So finding technology in these places where they fall the most and do it in a way that's really dignified so that it wouldn't require them to wear it. The whole video watching thing, do it in a way that, again, seeing whether you're using laser or but not actually interrupting their privacy. I think these are all things that become part of it. And if they want someone, if they live in their home, not in a senior living community, and they do want someone to just have this just in case. And then that becomes important. Have you ever done Life 360? Do you know what that technology is?
I've heard of it, but talk a little about it. Explain it.
It's really fascinating, actually. And so it's free, and then you have to upgrade and pay for more. But basically, you can basically put anyone on your family on Life 360. And it's really connected by your phone. So wherever you have your phone, you'll know. So you'll laugh at this one because it actually gives you a driving report of my 21-year-old saying, she had some risky maneuvers. And I'd be like, what is risky maneuvers? And, you know.
I'm sure she loved that.
Yeah, yeah. She was, you know what? She was the one who asked me to put the tech on because she was having anxiety of where me and my husband were. So she's like, Mom, could you just get Life 360? So when we went to Europe, she knew exactly where we were at any given moment. And, you know, and if we walked, you know, from this to that. And likewise, I know when Emma leaves a home, so it tells you Emma left home. You could put this on your dog. So it is a tracker, but it's using your phone. So I find it fascinating because I'm like, it's funny, like you've basically done the thing that we all say we don't want, but it's doing in a way that's friendly. It's not like I know everything that's going on with Emma. And if she doesn't have her phone, it also tells you when her battery is low. So say Emma's phone is critically low at 10%, which is it's just an older adult problem too, because they usually forget to charge. So I'll ping Emma and be like, hey, you looks like you need to charge your phone. And she's like, okay, Mom. She goes, and so it's nice because it's she's great. The one who asked me to do it, you know?
Sure. And it is interesting how, you know, tech adoption, you know, at the outset, it can feel really invasive, but eventually it becomes something that we just expect. You know, for example, I worked on a program decades ago now for one of the Baby Bells where it was introducing caller ID. And it was one of those things where it was, when we did consumer research, it was really kind of unsettling for people to know that you would know who I am and all the information about me. And now fast forward, you know, probably 2 or 3 decades hence, we wouldn't answer the phone if we didn't know who it was. Yeah. And now it's just a given that we're going to have that information and more information about the people calling us. So it's just, you know, interesting how something that was so jarring, you know, 20 years ago is now just expected.
Well, even the adoption around ChatGPT, if you see the numbers, they're staggering how quickly and how big the adoption has gone. I think I saw the latest was like 100 million. It jumped. It was like 30 million and it went to 100 million. And it has to do with value, right? So are you willing to give your information that's private to some sort of technology if you get something in return that's more valuable? So giving that in exchange for something more value. And it's funny, I've been messing around, especially my job transition, is trying to figure out like, what should I do? And there are ways now you can put in, compare ChatGPT with Claude and all of them all at once. And I asked the question, hey, you know, if I decided to open my own company, can you create me a business plan? And each one of them gave me between 30 to 50 page business plan. And that's in it, the value, right? I'm like, God, if I had to do this, I'd spend like days on end. But it gives you kind of the startup of getting started. And then it gives you great motivation because you're like, wow, I didn't know I could do this. So I just think that if, again, to your point with the bell, with the caller ID, I think we're willing to give a little privacy if we do get something that's really going to help us a lot.
Absolutely. No, that's, you know, important. And it is interesting. You're talking about how quickly AI is being adopted. I mean, I teach an internet advertising class and was talking about adoption of various technologies, adoption of the radio, then TV, then, you know, and then ultimately getting to the internet and some of the things that those adoption windows are shortening just incredibly. I mean, you know, to your point, AI just in a matter of months has, you know, and we all know that AI is changing almost faster than we're adopting it. So, you know, it is a real, strong iterative cycle. But, I think we are getting used to the world changing. And if we were to go back and look even, 5 or 10 years ago at the tech that we had then, I think we would all be shocked at what we were willing to live with or what we had to live with at the time. But
100%.
That's really interesting. So getting back to senior living providers, and again, with your experience, both through Leading Age California, Eschaton, and others, how should they think about integrating technology into daily life rather than presenting it as a feature or an add-on?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I mentioned this before, even as simple, something as simple as electric vehicles, and recognizing, what is the value and who's the future residents going to live there or the future children that's going to live there. You know, when you're doing a master plan and you only allotted for one or two electric vehicle chargers and you don't have any, and this is California, right? So I know that there are other states that are not as ahead as we are in regards to those things, but being prepared to do so, right? And recognizing that. We also have this shift for a lot of the apps like DoorDash and Uber Eats and things like that. And creating the space to have Uber Eats and DoorDash, building, just recognizing that this is how the world is moving. I have to say, I guilt myself so badly because I yell at my kids because they overuse Uber Eats and they spend too much money paying for delivery costs. But there are moments where I'm like, I'm really tired today. And I'm just like, oh, I'm going to bite the bullet. I'm going to go and do that. You know, I pay $9.99 for Uber Eats. So I was like, I'm going to do that once a month thing where I give myself a treat and let Uber Eats delivers. And it's great to be able to do that. So senior living needs to recognize that these are the trends and the patterns that folks want to be able to order these things, be able to charge their vehicle. And so that's integration. Like you've literally, the real estate of the building is not focused on, the fancy bar and the fancy restaurant and all these other things, but you incorporate technology as part of it. And clearly you need to have the right Wi-Fi as well, as I made that joke earlier, but Wi-Fi needs to be part of it. The other piece is even streaming. I don't think people have fully understood, we used to do cable agreements and, things like the Hallmark Channel and, I don't have cable anymore. We're all unplugged. We're using Hulu streaming. I mean, and recognizing that. So the next 5 years needs to create all the things that people want that they have in their current home should be as easy as if they're moving to senior living, having those amenities that are just part of living there and not extra costs, not an add-on. It should just be part of that.
Sure, sure. So what are some of the particular examples? You talked about DoorDash, Uber Eats, and some of the service providers. And, I know a lot of communities provide transportation to shopping, doctor's appointments, museums, theater, that sort of thing, where I've seen others establishing relationships with Lyft or Uber. Each has its own program for older adults. But what are some of the examples where technology, from your perspective, has truly improved the quality of life for residents or older adults as they're wanting to age at home?
Inside of the senior living community or inside of a home?
Either.
Okay. In the senior living community, it's funny, there's a community out in Cupertino and she is always looking at all kinds of cool things, but things that make sense. And she's the one who's added robots to her overall experience in her dining rooms. They're the ones that are bussing the tables per se. They're also the ones that will bring things to their rooms or apartments with their little robot. So I do find that really, quite interesting. I will say that we still haven't figured out, I think there's another very large brand that's doing smart apartments. And so they're trying to go in and have the lights go on by themselves, and the blinds and things like that, using a voice activated solution. And those are cool too. And those are interesting. But they're treating it like it's high end, like this is a high end house. And so you get that because you live in a very wealthy area. But, you know, it's funny, the affordable housing sector in senior living, we did some Alexa projects in those places, and they're just as engaged with using voice activation to do the things they need to do. Whether you're wealthy or not, I think that voice tech and just having smart apartments, those are all things that are just should be part of the package in living at a community. And living at home, you know, I really just think we have to do a better job of providing tech that's going to allow folks, again, to be more independent. My dad is really struggles with kind of moving around and with mobility. But, you know, you can turn the oven on with his voice using Alexa. He can, as I mentioned, they can do the laundry that way, using it to turn on the TV. I mean, because TV is such a big deal for him, and they like to watch Korean TV. Just being able to, you know, and he gets really excited because I can use this to set my alarm and find the weather versus opening up a phone and can't find stuff. You know, it's harder touchscreen for older adults. Those are like very simple tech. I don't, you know, even the Ring doorbell, I don't want to get into it. And I know there's controversy there too, but that is just like great for an older adult to know who's at the door and not be afraid. There's just a lot of opportunity.
Sure, sure. And it was interesting how you were talking about tech, even in affordable housing, because, you know, in some ways people might think that tech should really be more, as you were alluding to, more for the luxury, higher end. But in a lot of ways that can replace the need, because the staffing ratios are much lower in affordable housing. So you can still provide safe environments and a positive experience using tech and delivering it at a cost you'd never be able to deliver with, you know, by staffing. So that's an interesting notion.
Yeah, no, it's true. It is. And again, I don't think people fully understand how you fully optimize leveraging tech. I think there's a lot of just trials and pilots. I used to be all about just pilot it. But I'm getting to a point where, like, you know what? We're beyond pilots. We know that the tech works. You just need to use it.
Sure. Interesting. Interesting. No, good point. So we've talked a bit about AI already. It's everywhere right now, as we both know. You've argued that its value comes from removing friction rather than adding flash. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, but talk a little bit more about that, if you would, please.
Yeah, there's always friction in technology because, you know, there's this, you know, naturally there's a fear of using it. And I think AI has already a little bit of a cloud of, oh my gosh, again, and, you know, we don't want Terminator to happen. I don't know if I should touch it or even engage with it. But once you get past all of that and you start using AI, the whole optimization of the things you need to do. So I've been on the websites. I see that folks are trying to adopt the AI to leverage a little bit. But I just don't think we're there yet, you know, from an agentic AI perspective. I'm trying to think of a good example of where the friction is gone. I guess I could just use Alexa, for example.
Sure. So I'm going to ask you to share a little bit, because I know that you spent some of your career at Amazon, right?
I
so
did.
Yeah, talk a little about that.
Yeah. So you know, there's a love-hate relationship with Alexa. I think everybody has a love-hate relationship with her. And part of it is because sometimes she answers with really weird answers and you're like, what, what are you thinking? Or she'll annoy you and talk to you when you didn't ask her to talk to you. My husband upgraded, one of my Alexas to, Alexa Plus. And I was like, what? You upgraded her? I was like, I
still have a hard time getting used to the new voice.
Yes, yes. I don't. It's just the whole adjustment. But the whole point is that she becomes more of a concierge and you don't have to use her name. And that was actually a huge friction point at in senior living, because first of all, some of them couldn't say it. Second of all, when they did say it, they, you know, they couldn't get the right prompts. And so then, you know, it just became like, all right, well, I don't want to use it anymore. But then as soon as they figured it out, it was great. Well, what they're having you do now is you don't have to think about what you need to ask her. She's going to give you things that you, that she knows you're into. She, you know, obviously she knows what you're buying. She knows what you're, you know, what you ask for on a regular basis. So she's going to say, hey, I noticed that you put this in your Amazon Fresh cart. Would you like a recipe taking all the ingredients that you just put in there so that you can create a menu? And that's great. Those are kind of delightful kind of things where you're like, oh, so then she starts to think for you where you weren't thinking about it. And that's where friction goes down, because you don't have to ask her for something. She's now thinking and giving you suggestions. And I do think that that's what you're going to see more and more. When I was playing around with just like even using ChatGPT to work on my resume, and I said, here's the role. I plugged in the job description. I put it in there. I put my old resume in. And then she went, and I'm calling her she. I don't know what gender, but went ahead and, you know, and created this new resume based upon the role. And then it gave me prompts on the bottom. Said, would you like us to do an executive summary for you as well? Would you also like a cover letter? And I'm like, yes and yes. So it's, again, preventing me from asking so many questions or forgetting to ask. It's seamlessly knowing your second question. And I think that's really important, because then, you know, you don't have to think so much. And you've heard this. I don't know if you heard this recently, but people are saying that there's this ChatGPT laziness that's starting to develop because she's thinking a lot more for you. And so you kind of go down that path. So there is a balance, right? You've got to be careful, but I do think it does help you kind of engage and value her more. And that's smart of ChatGPT and all the other AI tools to do that.
I agree. It can make it things very efficient, as long as you don't fall in the trap of blindly accepting whatever she says, to use that gender pronoun. But that's kind of the way things are, because, you know, I use AI, we use AI a lot to advance, to iterate, to ideate, but it is an input, not a final product. I do think that we can run the risk of just letting it, you know, kind of blindly following.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I was talking to my son, he's 24. He's in his last year of undergrad, and he's his friend who graduated like 6 months before him was leveraging, and this was before the schools were becoming smart enough, but he basically did his entire, my son told me this, he did his entire last semester using ChatGPT to do his homework. And I was just like, and he got away with it? And he's like, yeah. And I said, but you can't get away with it anymore. He goes, no, the teachers are now figuring it out. But there is that, this is going on. And even this whole idea I just shared with you about the resumes, I think they're also figuring that out as well. You know, it's not, because there's a lot of tech people that actually got riffed recently. So, you know, you have to be very careful on, you know, there's still got to be original thought there.
Yep. It doesn't all start just seeming the same, sounding the same.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan that said, the thing that's going to differentiate you now is your emotional intelligence. That's going to be the thing that ChatGPT cannot create. So it's interesting, right? So we'll see how this all kind of rolls out, but I agree. And that's who's going to, when you go in interviews, that's what's going to tell you the difference between that candidate and this candidate.
Sure, sure. You know, I teach a class at Penn State, and we've used a program over the years called Turnitin, where you would submit a paper and it would scan the internet and let you know if if that content or how much of the content of a paper is already out there somewhere, so you can, you know, start to really understand if people are cheating or trying to do that. But with AI, you know, I do think it's, you know, can be harder, but it's important to still have the flavor of, I mean, to your point with just making sure that we're all able to have those original thoughts and have our creative sense coming through and you know, our tone of voice and all of those things, which I know AI is getting better and better at every day to create something that is meaningful. But that is so important. You know, where do you see the most immediate opportunities for AI to help senior living operators or care teams?
Yeah, I think documentation and being able to capture what needs to be done. I think there's a lot of missed service opportunities. Oftentimes when a nurse is engaging with an older adult, and sometimes they forget, you know, they're running around, they're a mobile worker. So if AI was there to help with documenting pieces that could be a service that they could then get reimbursement on, I think you can add revenue naturally, immediately, by having that integrated with their point click care or so on and so forth. And that's what I'm seeing even like in hospitals, where this integration to Epic is allowing them then to prescribe the right kind of service without them forgetting. It's a huge undertaking that gets lots of things get missed. And so it could be an assistant to a caregiver to create the best care plan and then to get the right service at the right time.
That's a great point. And, you know, we know that, you know, large health systems and, you know, even the government, you know, which I know can be fraught with points of view, but everybody's trying to make things more efficient and bring down the cost. And if AI can do that to help crystallize the care plans, that could be huge. So when you look ahead 10 or 20 years, what will the most successful aging organizations be doing differently from today, do you think?
I don't believe that senior living can afford to just be in their four walls. I believe that senior living, if they're successful, they will bridge into the home in such a way that they are already working on their future pipeline. They're already looking at engaging with that future resident. They will have their care plans ready when they move into transition. It'll be all set.
Interesting.
And rather than waiting, and that's the worst problem, and you know this, is that waiting till they move in and everything starts. I believe that the most successful senior living community is going to be able to move in and work with their future resident inside the walls 5 years before. And by doing so, you will have access to their care plans, what's the most important thing for them. You'll know that, you know, what is the lifestyle they want to engage with, so that when you make that transition where they do have to be in a care home or senior living community, it will be seamless. And I do think AI is going to contribute to that. And so once that starts to happen, and then for those that are middle market and not necessarily want that, but they want to a la carte their services, I also envision that there'll be services at senior living that do really, really well, whether it's they have the best food or they have the best, you know, physical wellness programs, that they're figuring out a way to allow middle market to tap into it without moving in. Those will be the most successful.
That's great. That's great. Well, Gina Beck, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for giving us the time, your perspectives on a whole lot of things as it relates to age tech and, you know, and other topics within aging services and senior living. So last question we ask every guest, what have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
My younger self. I got into this field 16 years ago, and at the time, HP touchscreens and Wi-Fi was the big thing. So I probably would have told myself to maybe make more investments in the AI side of it, probably would have focused more on helping create this transition from the middle market to the senior living communities. If I could have figured that out, then I would probably have solved a lot of things. So it bothers me that there's still a lot of tech that's not that great of tech, but still exists. There's a lot of stuff out there that I'm like, is that still here? I think, and I've always made the joke that senior living is like healthcare is 10 years behind everyone and senior living's behind 10 years behind healthcare. Still believe that's the case. And they say home care is worse than that. And so I do think we have an opportunity to leapfrog. So my younger self would be like, you know, figuring out a better platform, figuring out something that is interoperable, because there's a lot of stuff that's out there that I will say is not worth two pennies because it's built on vaporware and still not great.
Sure. Great advice to your younger self and to the rest of us out there in the field. So Gina, thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Derek. This has been great.
Always fun to chat. I'm Derek Dunham, and I'd like to also thank Dave Schaffner, our producer, and Matt Campbell, our engineer. We'll see you next time on Roundtable Talk.